welcome to the sixth season of For the Quantum Grammar Shoot podcast. I'm your host, Jason-Matthew Glass, and in this season, I'm going to be concentrating much more on the grammar and sharing my knowledge thereof. To those listeners who are serious about the grammar and are serious about learning it and about learning the benefits that it can present to you as a tool in your navigations through your day-to-day life. Thank you very much for joining me. When one chooses to study correct sentence structure, communication, parsing, syntax, grammar, of course there are periphery subjects that one may also study that helps with the comprehension, cognition, and understanding of the grammar and how the grammar works, especially on a psychological level. I've mentioned in the past something called the Trivium Method, which I studied for 2 years and got closure on. What that is, the Trivium, you know, the trifecta contract, you have the grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Now, with my understanding, these three things used to be taught in schools up until the beginning of the 20th century, when logic was completely taken out. And also grammar was dumbed down. I'm not talking about quantum grammar, because with my knowledge, that has never been implemented in any system anywhere, historically. I have not seen any evidence of it. A caveat to that is that when I look at some land contracts and real estate contracts from the 1800s, I do see a lot of prepositional article phrases, but it's not used in any way that could be construed as a mathematical interface. In any case, grammar, logic, and rhetoric, where first, and this would go along with the development of a child, where first they learn how to talk, to speak, to communicate, and then they learn how to vet the data that comes through their senses, their port of sensation, and then they learn how to articulate claims and have conversations, which would be rhetoric. So you got grammar, logic, and rhetoric. But then they took logic out. It's a very important piece to take out. So, in any case, I highly recommend studying the Trivium Method. What I did was, I studied that for 2 years, and then I ran into quantum grammar. And I had to take out the fiction grammar and replace it with quantum grammar. And it worked beautifully. That's how I did it. Highly recommend it. So, one of the other things that one can study, in addition to the Trivium Method, would be the Hegelian dialectic, which, amazingly enough, one can see in just about every fiction construct there is if one looks closely enough. The most obvious example of the Hegelian dialectic in today's society would be politics, where you have the left side, which is the Democrats, and then you have the right side, which are the Republicans. Two seemingly, apparently, diametrically opposed constructs, yet their two hands attached to the same body, ruled by the same brain, the same capital, the same head. So people may be fooled into thinking that they're getting two separate flavors, when in the end, it doesn't matter what flavor you get, the same end goal is going to be put in place by the shareholders, the capital, the brain, that commands those two separate entities. In other words, it doesn't matter if there's a Biden in office or a Trump in office. The shareholders are going to get what they want because in the end, it's all about the money. It's all about the control. Quantum grammar, crowd, contingent, whatever you want to call it, community, is no different. By my knowledge, by my perception, what I've been witnessing since I first began as a naive beginner, thinking that everyone wanted the same thing, thinking that Colin David hyphen Wynn Colin Miller, Colin Russell hyphen J. Colin Gould, thinking that they were men of their word and that they were completely transparent and that they wanted the same things I wanted. Well, as I went on, I began to see that that was not the case. A caveat to that, Colin David hyphen Wynn Colin Miller. I was very fortunate and very blessed to have had one-on-ones with him, speaking on the phone, some of which I have recorded, communicating via email, Skype, text messages, etc., etc. And I will say that in my conversations with that man, he was 100% consistent with what he said. He was 100% consistent in his moods. He never got angry. He never flew off the handle. He was always very consistent in the things that he would say about subjects, about people. Very calm, cool, and collected. Extremely different than Colin Russell hyphen J. Colin Gould, where you can look at any recent video that that man's put out from 2018. Like, if you watch any video with Colin David hyphen Wynn Colin Miller, I challenge you to find any video where David gets angry or yells or anything like that. It's just not there. And there's thousands of hours of it out there. Now, look at the same thing for David's student, Colin Russell hyphen J. Colin Gould. I think you see what the point I'm getting at here. So, I just wanted to put that out there. Now I'll get on to the next thing I was going to talk about. So I touched on the Hegelian dialectic as it relates to politics. Now I'm going to touch on it in the now space with relation to quantum grammar. I'm not going to mention names, but anyone who is up to date with the latest quantum grammar videos coming from either England or coming from the United States, you'll know who I'm talking about. There is a Hegelian dialectic going on in quantum grammar. You have, on the one hand, on the left, you have the fantasy fiction author. We'll call him J.R.R. Tolkien. You got a guy that doesn't show really any evidence of any closure on the grammar, doesn't even talk about the grammar, except in a theoretical sense, which logic would dictate that if one only speaks about a topic in a theoretical sense, then that's the extent of their knowledge on said topic. And J.R.R. Tolkien, we'll call him J.R.R. Tolkien, claims to be many things. Claims to have quantum jails. And the reason why I give him the left side and give him the fantasy side is because he claims to be able to see certain realities through movies and music. So fiction things, constructs like movies and music, this J.R.R. Tolkien fellow goes into those, pulls out his own interpretations, and tries to present them to his audience, his followers, his believers, as factual things that they can navigate their finances on and things like that. Very dangerous stuff. But if you know what I'm talking about, then you know who I'm talking about. J.R.R. Tolkien. That's the left side. That's the left flavor. He's more into the fantastical side of things, the mystical side of things, having to do with the mysticism that we'll call it, known as psychiatry, which is a laughable quote-unquote form of whatever you want to call it, psychology. I don't know too much about it. I just know that psychiatrists will bring someone in for a 10-minute appointment and solve all their problems with a pill. That's about the extent of it. So that's the way I kind of look at J.R.R. Tolkien over here. Because he's telling people to go out and just give 100 question psychopathy tests to a total stranger, as if they have a position to do that. No, I'm sorry. That's trespass. In another video, he talks about how reporters and journalists went from asking people questions to being accusatory about things. And now he's doing the same thing by telling his followers, his believers, to accuse people of psychopathy and give them 100 question psychopathy tests. You can't make this stuff up. It's very fantastical, and that's why I put him, J.R.R. Tolkien, on the fantasy side, the left side of the Hegelian dialectic. Now we move to the right side of the Hegelian dialectic. The right side is not just fiction, it's science fiction. And the reason why I say that is because this side of the Hegelian dialectic seems to be more scientific, more authoritarian. And I'm using these left and right analogies for a reason. You could almost give the analogy that the left side is like a liberal, a Democrat, and the right side is more conservative because, well, you'll see. So the right side is more authoritarian, more militaristic, more into commanding things, more scientific with claims of periodic tables and things like that. My way or the highway type of things. We'll kick your ass if you don't do what I say. This type of thing. So these are two different flavors. You have fantasy, you have science fiction. And on the science fiction side, we'll call that guy Arthur C. Clarke. So you got J.R.R. Tolkien and you got Arthur C. Clarke. Now Arthur C. Clarke is a little bit more bold in that he demands of his followers, his true believers, he demands that they pay for his documents. You have to have his documents with his thumbprint on it, with his autograph on it, and then you come under his jurisdiction. Then you can do whatever you want, as long as you bend down and kiss his ass, then you can do whatever you want. If you don't do that, now you're an enemy of the state. Now you're going to get a bounty seeker after you. Now you're going to get an arrest warrant issued. You're a criminal if you do not follow his orders. Arthur C. Clarke. This is the difference. That's not to say that the left side, the fantasy side, J.R.R. Tolkien, that's not to say that he's not making money too, because he is. He makes a lot of money. He actually has a better business sense than Arthur C. Clarke, because he plays into the fantastical element of it. J.R.R. Tolkien sells judgeships. And just to share with you a personal story here, because remember, as I say, this is opinion. This podcast is opinion. I had a guy who a kid actually, who went to J.R.R. Tolkien's Plenipotentiary Judge Program, his ambassador program. So when he came back, he was supposed to be a plenipotentiary judge and also, I think, some kind of sheriff. He called me and asked me what he should do because he had been pulled over by the police. This is a kid who had just spent thousands of dollars on J.R.R. Tolkien's Plenipotentiary Judge Program, calling me, because we were friends at the time, asking me what should he do because a police officer had pulled him over. So, that's the best way I can put it. And not to leave Arthur C. Clarke out of it, I can't even count the number of Arthur C. Clarke students or whatever, believers, followers, who became disillusioned and contacted me asking me, can you teach me the grammar? Because nobody over there knows the grammar. And they're mean. And they tell me I'm stupid, so on and so forth. So that's a Hegelian dialectic as it relates to quantum grammar. You got your two different flavors. You got your left side, your fantasy side, J.R.R. Tolkien. And you got your right side, your science fiction side, your Arthur C. Clarke. Both sides have their followers, their true believers. And it's definitely a cult type of scenario because these people are buying into assumptions and presumptions at a staggering and mind-boggling rate. Meaning that, I'll give you a real-time now-space example. Both of these people, J.R.R. Tolkien and Arthur C. Clarke, have badmouthed me, said very nasty things about me, and their followers just eat it right up and continue to spread that type of negativity. Even though they don't know me, never met me, never spoke to me, yet they continue to promulgate those assumptions and presumptions, which is how the fiction works, which is how I know that both of those men completely, undoubtedly, without question, are fiction entities. So to wrap it up, what does all this mean in relation to the periphery topics that one would study for the grammar? Well, I've just given you a psychological study of the Hegelian dialectic. How each side has a flavor that appeals to the public. Where do I fit into this? Well, I don't fit into it. Because it's with my experience over the last few years that the majority of people would much rather participate with the fiction, assumption, presumption of a J.R.R. Tolkien or of an Arthur C. Clarke, rather than learn the grammar on their own and become autonomous on their own. I can see why that would be a threat. Why people would perceive me as a threat. Because all I'm doing is teaching correct grammar and teaching people how to be autonomous. If you come to me to learn the grammar, and then you learn the grammar, number one, you won't need me anymore. And number two, you certainly won't need a J.R.R. Tolkien, and you won't need an Arthur C. Clarke. All you need is you. And that's a threat to the livelihoods and the control systems of the fiction. The fiction definitely wants you under control. And the left and the right are two ways, classic ways, historically very successful ways of controlling you, the population of Earth. And what I offer is a simple tool, technology, to get you out of that. It's a very scary thing to do it on your own, yes. Sure, it's probably much easier and much more mentally less stressful to follow someone, to become a believer of someone, to become subservient to someone. Yeah, that is probably easier. And I don't blame anybody who does that. I mean, whatever. That's up to you. That's It's just not my route. I'm more than happy to chuck this all in the trash if need be. I don't care. I'm not beholden to it. I'm not attached to it. It's not a big deal to me. I hold the grammar as sacred. I hold the tech as pure. That's why I teach it. But if it ever comes a point where I just see that it's not worth it to me, that the rule one, rule equal isn't there anymore, then why would I continue? I've given, I think, enough hours, and I've given enough knowledge to certain individuals out there that this will carry on, whether I'm here or not. It doesn't matter. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with going off into the sunset, knowing that I did my part. It's not a big deal. I'm peaceful, neutral, honorable, graceful, rule one, rule equal. Those three principles right there, I can guarantee you, neither the left nor the right have any idea how to maintain those positions, because I don't see any evidence of it in their grammar performances or in their day-to-day video performances that they put on the internet. I just don't see it. So, with that, one other caveat. That little military thing that I said at the beginning, a personal story on my part, I was never in the military. However, at one point in time when I was a very young man, I wanted to join the military, and I actually went to the MEPS Center in Pittsburgh to enlist. But when I saw the way they treated people, and I began to see the brainwashing that was going on, I said, no way, I'm not doing that. This has nothing to do with serving one's country or protecting one's family. This is something else, and it wasn't for me. I was actually going to go in for infantry for 2 years. But then I saw what the psychology of it was, and no, that wasn't for me. I do have much honor and respect for those men and women who go in there with the volition of defending their country and their families. But the caveat is this. I have spoken with multiple men and women who have been in the military, who have been in Iraq. I had a best friend who was in Desert Storm. I had a good friend who was in Iraq, 82nd Airborne, in Iraq, the second go-around, in Afghanistan. And I have multiple other friends who have been in the military in some form or another. Without fail, each one of them have come out knowing that they were not defending the country. They were defending the interests, the economic interests of shareholders of a corporation. And basically killing innocent people that had nothing to do with that. So, any case, I just wanted to throw that caveat out there. If you want to learn the grammar, if you're serious about the grammar, contact me at jasonmatthewg17@gmail.com. We'll set up a 10 to 15 minute consultation to see if that actually is what you want to do. And until next time, have a good one.